1986 was a big year for shoulder pads, Hands Across America, the debut of Doritos, and Bon Jovi. It was also a pretty big year for Jim Henson, but not in the positive way we might imagine. The movie Labyrinth came to theaters in 1986 after an extremely busy year in development, just a year. It only took 6 months to shoot the film in all its technical glory. The puppetry and effects, both digital and practical, are still a marvel with our current perception of the movie as a classic and beloved cult phenomenon today. It seems crazy to remember that the film failed pretty badly at the box office. Jim Henson was crushed and suffered some difficult times professionally after the disappointing culmination of such artistry and effort. He would not go on to direct another feature film. The movie's imaginative setting, story, and characters did not seem poised to live on past 1986. Neither did shoulder pads. But some things and some characters are just too memorable to forget. Hi, and welcome to Understudies, a podcast where we try to shine a spotlight on the characters in facts or fiction who aren't necessarily considered the star of the show. Call them side characters, supporting cast, or whatever, we like to think of them as simply understudied, and want to give them a little extra attention. Some of the characters and figures we'll be discussing might in fact be the main character to certain stories or areas of study, but we're trying to address them as they've come to be known to a wide audience. While we might not be experts in each area we try to cover, we know that some of you absolutely are, and we hope you'll reach out with some feedback or extra info that we are likely to leave out. We're also open to suggestions if there's a character or figure you'd like to listen to on the show. We're so excited to explore the personalities and characteristics that contributed to some of the most impactful and memorable stories ever told, true or imagined.
Okay, today we're joined by Autumn, a best friend of both of us mutually. Hey, how's it going?
Great, I'm glad to be on here.
Labyrinth is such a strange film. Like, It and Dark Crystal, and there's a couple other dark fantasy, like, films that I think... Oh, Black Cauldron, that was the other one that I was trying to think of. Like, all those harbor the same sort of cultural space for me, where it's, like, really, like, strangely dark, like, fantasy films that are produced and completely failed whenever they debuted. Like, it's such a strange film.
80s mythos definitely had its heyday.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with Labyrinth, either as a fan today or an original fan from the 86 release, you're likely familiar with Sarah's sometimes trusty sidekick, Hoggle. His entrance alone is completely unforgettable. I mean, it's not every day you get to meet a character peeing into a puddle, and that's the first time you see him on screen.
Is that actually the first time you see him?
It's the first time you see him.
That's so funny.
Today, our fabulous guest star, Autumn, a professional illustrator and nostalgia aficionado, is here to join us and kind of help us shed a little light, because there's a lot more to Hoggle than even just the movie leaves off with, right?
Yes. In the canon universe, there is a 4-part manga series that was followed in the early 2000s. That shed a little bit more light on his story, not as much because the main character of that entire series was actually Toby grown up. And there's even where Sarah comes in at a certain point, but the main focus is Toby.
Oh, weird.
Oh, yes. The son.
The baby.
Yes. Yeah.
The babe.
Yes.
That's
and,
weird.
And Hoggle does appear a few times in that, and definitely in circumstances where he does help. He becomes... In that, you see that he's grown, he's matured, he's, you know, realized that he has friends and family to rely on, and that definitely shows that he's grown as a person, or as a dwarf.
Man, we think he's just the perfect candidate to bring on. He is just, nothing could have happened without Hoggle. He doesn't get the credit he deserves.
I don't know. He's a weird guy in an already weird film. Labyrinth is really weird. Like, It's like if you were like, okay, let's take like Alice in Wonderland and let's make it like just kind of, let's bring it even further off kilter and like just strained in terms of its like plot beats and its like narrative significance and like what it's trying to say about like that kind of like headspace and everything. And Hoggle, like as a dude, is just all over the place in the film itself. Like,
well, you're never really sure what to think of him necessarily. Is he good? Is he bad? Is he going to help? Is he not? But we had mentioned a little bit beforehand about just how Hoggle and Sarah, our main character, are really just two sides of the same coin.
Yes, absolutely. Not only is this movie about Sarah and her growth and understanding and realizing that she shouldn't be pushing her family away and shutting them out, and that, you know, it's also an age, or it's a film about aging. It's about learning to be in the real world. You see her in the beginning as being in a very fantastical childhood fantasy, mm-hmm. and then learning that things are not fair. Life is not fair. You have to work. You have to struggle to get to where you want to be or what you need to earn in this life. And what is really interesting is that you also see the same progression through Hoggle. He is right there along with her. You see him almost battle the same obstacles that she does. And what I think is really interesting, tying back to how you kind of classified these movies together, there is a tie-in about those movies, which I think is what made so many people uncomfortable and not very happy with these, is that they are a darker fantasy, but what they were pushing is that psychological, like, line for children. What, yeah. you know, like, this is what children should be learning about as they age, but is it still considered a children's film anymore?
It yeah. really kind of was a movie-making Wild West then, because it was either very new or yet to be established for that PG-13 rating, which kind of yes. tries to seat that middle ground. So these were some of the early ones that were specifically aiming for that. And honestly, this is not a film that I grew up with, and some of us may have watched it a little too young. It's one of those that seems to scar kids if they're just not quite old enough for it. So I'm glad, honestly,
that
it took me a few years. But
Dark Crystal does that too, doesn't it? Which is also
I can't believe that I didn't grow up with these. It just it's crazy. Jim Henson is such a classic.
Something about puppets in a darker setting, like literally just they like I love the Muppets. The Muppets is like, I mean, I grew up with them sort of just in like the background, and now that I'm older, I can appreciate them even more than I did then, you know? But just a bit darker, basically, just a bit bleaker in that direction. They just like take on this otherworldly, uncanny aesthetic, and it's just, yeah, I think it messed up a lot of people when they were younger.
The irony, just as a side note here, is that Landon happens to be wearing a Muppets t-shirt as we record this episode.
Listen. I can't prepare, okay? I'm here to play.
If I had any Labyrinth merchandise, I'd be wearing it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway.
Share a little bit about the development of this character through Sarah's struggles.
Of course. So we're going to start off right where they meet each other. You know, how they were introduced, that Hoggle is carelessly peeing into a pond in the grounds of the Labyrinth, which he is the groundskeeper. That is his appointed position by Jareth, the Goblin King. So in retrospect, that already gives us a glimpse into his personality, that he...
dangerously carefree.
Yes, dangerous. Yeah, like pretty much the, you know, kind of punk teenager aspect that you're getting from Sarah, where, you know, they want to rebel. They don't feel like this fits them anymore, these boxes. And so he's taking his vandalism where he can in a very, you know, kind of excusable way.
What a way to mirror that character, man.
Exactly. And it's just very interesting for their first interaction that Hoggle seems to already know that she's Sarah, that she's there, and that she's supposed to be there.
That's right. I almost forgot about that. Gosh.
Yeah, it's so that leads into the fandom theory that Jareth has, let's say, lured many Sarahs or young teenage girls into this realm.
That is a really interesting take. That really does kind of change. I need to rewatch this now because that's going to be a crazy thing to have in my mind.
Yeah, and that's where all the goblins come from, too. They are the abandoned babies. Presumably baby brothers that were not rescued
yeah.
in time.
Oh, yeah. Shoot.
Woof.
Yes.
What a... David Bowie's perfect casting for that man. As yes. an aside. Anyway,
he was a perfect choice, even though he, I believe, was not their first choice.
What a legacy.
Really?
Yes.
That's wild. Well, the two of them, Sarah and Hoggle, really seem to kind of have like a sunrise-sunset thing going on to me. Like, Sarah is in this bright, just beginning to rise on the world stage of life where she's kind of coming into being a grown-up for the first time, Hoggle sort of reads to me like, oh, there's no hope. I'm at the end of my line. I've had my time and, you know, I'm just kind of here and I've done what I can. And he seems a lot easier to give up on. Sarah's a lot more determined, but she's just too gung-ho and he kind of has to lead her and we're never quite sure where.
Yes, and actually that's, again, where it ties into them being two sides of the same coin. She has the kind of naive attitude that, you know, she's going to get through it, the world's going to work out, things are going to be fair because she's at least taking that step. That's what, you know, what her main complaint is. That's not fair. This isn't fair.
She does do an awful lot of whining in the film,
yes,
doesn't she?
Exactly.
She gets so much better in the back half, but like, man, she's insufferable. Anyway, I mean, that's the point, you know, she's a teenage girl, you know, nothing worse. Anyway,
but
as a, you know, that, yeah, probably not painting the best picture, I guess. I'm surrounded on both sides. What am I doing?
But I mean, that is also just kind of where we get to see the reflection of Hoggle. Rewatching the movie today so I could prepare for this podcast, I saw actually a new light on their first interaction, which is that, you know, Sarah comes in, she sees Hoggle, and they have this brief interaction, and he starts doing his job where he sprays and harms the fairies, you know, to tone down the population,
right.
Let's say.
Oh, no.
And she is offended that he would harm these beautiful, just adorable small creatures, but then immediately is bitten by one that she sees as being innocent. And he is unbothered by this. He's like, of course, that's how they react. He's the street smart character that actually, through the subsequent interactions after that point, he actually gives her quite a few tips to deal with the labyrinth.
Oh, yeah. She could not have done any of that on her own. She was not poised to be able to handle that properly.
No, wasn't going not on. At all.
And a lot of the time it didn't. But when it did, it was usually because he was able to guide her. And sometimes, I guess to put it a little more on the nose, he never led her anywhere he didn't intend for her to go.
Yes.
Whether it was good, whether it was bad, he knew his way around.
His intentions through the movie, even though he was being bullied by Jareth, is that his intentions were good. He did want her to at least try, to at least get in there and try to get as far as she could. He didn't have a lot of hope, whereas she was very optimistic that she could, you know, save Toby.
Yes.
So it's very interesting to see the growth. Like, if you rewatch the film, I definitely, of course, recommend that you really focus on Hoggle's journey, because you're going to see a lot more emotional growth through him.
He sneaks into the background for too much of it. She seems like this headstrong hero who comes in her own and learns all these lessons, but it's really through Hoggle. It's just as much his story as it is hers.
Absolutely. And rewatching as an adult, I definitely realize that now, that you see quite a bit of a more full experience of the story, mm-hmm. rather than just, you know, the, like you said, gung-ho hero that charges forward and defeats the dragon and saves the princess and wins the day, you know. You're going to see a lot more complex emotional range.
Which is a pretty cool way of acknowledging your whole audience. You've got a film for an adolescent. You get to see their story. You've got parents that have to guide these adolescents on, whether they know how to do it or not. You kind of see a whole representation in there. I mean, there are other side characters too, but none of them quite so slipping by without credit. Didymus is super memorable. What is the big huggable guy's name?
Ludo.
Ludo is super memorable. Not a lot of people think to Hoggle when they think of Labyrinth, but he was the goat. what would we be without Hoggle?
Yes, exactly. And I think that he was in place, one, to help Sarah on her journey, but also to be a reflection for the other kids in the audience. Not every kid is going to relate to Sarah. They're not going to see, you know, themselves as, you know, the optimistic, like, hey, life is great. And if it doesn't work out, that's life's problem. It's not my problem. They're going to be the hardened kids that had to struggle through life. And they're going to see Hoggle being able to literally save the day and rescue his friends and be treated with so much love and respect.
Yeah, you know? it he really does have to come full circle with that. I mean, I can definitely relate to that age range, thinking I was a little too old for trying new things, or, you know, certain opportunities had passed because I didn't try hard enough or do it early enough. And I think even though I really wasn't a very old child, is that even a thing? it just seemed like, oh, like I can't try this. Other kids have been doing it forever. I just can't try. I feel like I see a little bit of that when I see Hoggle. I can't have my adventure. I just have to babysit this kid through hers. But he has one, despite his own doubts. I just think there's a lot of ways that you could kind of see yourself in this character.
Absolutely.
He's so strange in terms of his relation to the subtext of the story as well. You know, like, his characterization is one thing, and his mirroring with Sarah is really interesting, I guess, on, like, you know, in that lens. But when taken with the context that, like, he as well as the other characters in the story are, there's that scene where, like, all of the you know, fairy creatures are those, like, toys on, like, the shelves and things like that, and they're, you know, the climax of the film is them being, like, crystallized at, like, the end, and, like, oh, well, you know, like, she may have grown up and stuff, but she's not, like, she won't forget about, like, them, sort of like the toys on the shelf kind of, like, scenario. It's like,
in the mirror.
Yeah, you guys, you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about her room where it's...
Yeah.
Okay, yes, actually, that, I was gonna bring that up. It's in the beginning where you're introduced and she's in her room, and towards the end you get to see, you know, where all the characters are represented in her room.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really odd. So it's like, okay, her whole story is fairly, like, you know, surface level in regards to her basically, like, overcoming her, like, struggles and, like, you know, like, that sort of classic, like, fairy tale, like, stuff. But then it's like Hoggle as, like, a sort of secondary, like, main character is, like, it's as if the fairy tale is, like, reflecting back on itself, you know? It's like the fairy creature is growing up in, like, the same way that the actual, like, he is like a portion of her, like, imagination, like, crystallized into, like, something, but he himself is, like, undergoing, like, those same anxieties and struggles. It's such a weird, strange dynamic for a character like that.
Kind of a note to just the ever-morphing phases of life,
yeah,
that we kind of all go through and have to look back on and,
yeah,
realize where we came from. And it's very interesting. So you are an illustrator. Take me a little bit into the wheelhouse of some of the graphic novelizations. Not a lot of people know, but Hoggle's story does not end when the film ends.
No, actually, there are a few specific comics that were released and now are gathered into hardback volumes that are, as far as we are told, canon in the Jim Henson universe of Labyrinth. There are two right off the top of my head that really focus on Hoggle, and I really like them. One of them being, let me pull up my notes real quick, called Hoggle and the Worm, written by Ted Neffe. And Adrian Ambrose. It is a very short story about a holiday that happens in the world of Labyrinth that is kind of like their version of Valentine's Day. It's a very romantic holiday, which, okay, I'm sure most people not imagine goblins getting very
what do you lovey-dovey. Mean? You don't think of a goblin when you hilarious. Think of romance?
Of course. But the major plot of that story is that Hoggle feels very alone. He doesn't have anyone to smooch at the gobbler's gave.
Oh, no.
And so he actually runs into our good old friend, the Worm, and asks for his advice. And the Worm suggests that he should go see the humongous warrior and insult him.
Oh.
And what Hoggle doesn't really understand through the worm's words is that he is supposed to go to the warrior so that he can be cut in half, because then he will have someone. He'll have his other half.
Oh, sneaky.
Hoggle does survive this incident. And
thank goodness. That's a close call.
I think of all the people I would not want to insult the humongous warrior is probably amongst the top people on that list.
It's right there in the name. That's so crazy. When did that come out? When were these released?
This one, unfortunately, I don't have the date on here for that one. But it was definitely within the last 6 years that a lot of these have come out.
Oh, interesting. Kind of in that cult classic resurgence of popularity that this movie has enjoyed in pretty recent years. It's a different generation that has come to appreciate it. It certainly wasn't necessarily the generation that saw its release that appreciated it the best, but I am glad that it's getting the attention it deserves.
That's how often is like the story with these films though, you know, like say like Dark Crystal and what is it, Black Cauldron, like all those in that sort of like 80s fantasy realm. Like they come out absolutely awful. Everyone hates it. It's lampooned. There's just like a bunch of stuff. And now it's like around like, well, I guess within like the last like decade, everyone's like, actually,
recover. Yeah, dust exactly. It off.
I was going to suggest, because Labyrinth actually traumatized me as a kid, even though I became quite a big fan of it, is that, you know, pushing that psychological line for kids, it was kind of traumatizing. But when you revisit things like that, you get to face your fears and see like, oh, this is like such a beautiful, intricate masterpiece.
Absolutely.
That's a really good point. I actually really like that. Yeah. Like, okay. This isn't the sort of thing that any of them are going to ask for. All right. But life's not fair. And there's a lot of elements about it that are like at their onset, on their surface, maybe a little bit unpleasant. But that doesn't mean that the beauty in those stories can't be found if, you know, you do a little bit of digging.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Sarah does in that pile of garbage, you know.
Digging her way out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The other comic that I was going to mention that really focuses on Hoggle is actually one where he is appointed his job as the groundskeeper.
Oh.
Originally, apparently, he was actually a wall guard, but he was treated very poorly by the other guards and definitely resented his job and did not appreciate it. So when he stumbled upon the, at the time, current groundskeeper, he was able to somewhat trick the groundskeeper into switching jobs, you know.
What a sneak.
Yeah. Very, very clever, mischievous little dwarf we have here.
That's so funny.
Who was the other groundskeeper?
That is a little bit of a plot twist in the comic, so I'm not going to reveal that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
Everybody go out, do your research.
And, I mean, that's been out for at least a few years now, so you could definitely find it at your local bookstore. Or that even online.
Man, well, the thing that strikes me a lot about Hoggle is just the even intentional, forgettable nature of him. There are a lot of instances in which forgetting this character come up as a joke in the film itself. His name is consistently mispronounced from start to finish. He kind of toddles around in the background. He does not have the luster of design or memorable design that several other characters do. He does have quite a punchy entrance, and he does have quite a punchy purpose. But Hoggle, or Higgle, or is it Hogwart, or what? Just even in a very literal sense, you said you were reading up something about how the animatronic itself was forgotten.
Yeah, in an airport, they lost it. They just literally forgot it and like left it there, and then it decayed in a suitcase. And they like, or something to that effect. They open it up, and it's just like rot. It's just horrible. Like the pictures of it just were. Oh gosh, you would have hated it. It's like,
if you're an old animatronics fan like I am, this probably has popped up in some research. I would encourage you to check it out if that strikes you. It kind of strikes me. But regardless, we thought he was a pretty deserving character for the spotlight he worked so hard for.
Yeah, I felt like he was definitely a very overlooked character, and that he was definitely being abused and mistreated by Jareth, and that he deserved his rightful spotlight. Which, tying in from the manga series that I mentioned earlier, he actually does earn the title of Prince of the Bog of Eternal Stench.
I guess you gotta be Prince of something. Hold it high, Hoggle. Oh, goodness. That's so funny. Well, Hoggle steps up to Herogues more than any other friend of Sarah's in the film. he faces the most risk and achieves the most growth. It's no wonder he helped launch a film from the brink of being forgotten into the realm of the unforgettable. And even though he may not be the standout character that comes to mind when you're thinking of the film, he's a big reason the story was lovable at all. And where would we be without our favorite side characters? Thank you for joining us after our nice long winter break. It's good to be back. And thank you also, Autumn, for joining us. We love having a guest star. This has been so much fun, and man, we could not have done this without you. If Hoggle's story and its continuations interest you, tell us a little bit. Where can you find those today?
You can find the more recent ones, such as Under the Spell and The Coronations, Volume 1 and 2, on Amazon or anywhere on a online bookstore. Unfortunately, the manga series from the early 2000s, Jim Henson's Return to Labyrinth manga, is a little bit more difficult to find, but I'm sure if you dig around, you could probably find some, let's say, not so legal sites to read it on.
You gotta do what you gotta do. So if any of those references that mentioned earlier in the show interest you, definitely go check those out. Also, definitely go check out our fabulous guest star, Autumn, on her various sites. She's very accessible on Twitter and TikTok at Artist Makes. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you got going on.
Well, on most of those platforms, I just promote a lot of the fan art and projects that I'm working on. On my TikTok, I'm actually doing a series right now called The Accountable Diary, where I am just vlogging my days in short little clips and just showing, you know, kind of what gets me going through each day and being able to get through, you know, this very long pandemic.
This is what we all need. If you're a fan of the slice of life, or if you just like wholesome pick-me-up content or very creative takes on fantastical things, definitely go give her a check and a follow.
You can also check me out on Patreon, support me on there, and you'll get access to a lot of great illustration and comic projects that I'm working on right now. And you can get behind the scenes. And I also have a spicy tier where you can get a little bit more R-rated material.
Absolutely. It's all fantastic. It's all so original and awesome. And biggest fan. Biggest fan, and you will be too. So at Artist Makes, Twitter, Patreon, go check it out. We also appreciate your support and your patience. Our following episode is going to return to our factual character, and I think that will be quite a bit of fun, but I'm curious. Let us know. Did you guess correctly? Last episode, we let you know what we were leading into. We said, hey, we got a throwback. Was it the throwback you expected? Any guesses for next time? We will see you then.